Arizona isn't just in our name. It's our home, too. That's why Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona is taking action for better health right here in Pima County. We're mobilizing resources to help make a difference in critical health issues, and we're offering new health plans for individuals and families in 2019. It all adds up to a healthier you, healthier community, a healthier Pima County. Here to protect what matters most, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona. Live fearless.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Ryan Finley, sports editor at the Arizona Daily Star, joined today by Michael Lev. Michael, this is all like way too sudden. There's a football game on a Friday night in Salt Lake City. I don't know if Arizona's ready for it. The Wildcats, they're 3-3 overall, 2-1 in Pac-12 play. They travel to Salt Lake, where it's going to be chilly-ish, is my guess.
Chilly-ish? In the 50s, going down into the 30s.
Yeah, so that's cold.
For here, yeah. I don't think it's great timing for Arizona.
No.
You've got a quarterback in Khalil Tate, who's had this ankle issue since week two, so one fewer day for him to rest and recuperate. You've got your left tackle, Laith Freck, hobbling around on a bad ankle. And you've got your best cornerback, who's Jace Whitaker, who's played one series the entire season. So just look at those three guys that I mentioned. That's maybe like three of their top five overall players who are banged up. In addition, you know, Utah might be the most physical team in the conference. If they're not, they're in the top two or three for sure. So it's going to be really difficult. And this is going to sound strange, and maybe I'm skipping ahead here a little bit, but I feel like Arizona might – their best chance might be to kind of beat Utah at its own game. Like, I think this is going to be a defensive special teams type of game. And if they can continue to play well on the defensive side of the ball and maybe make a big play or two on special teams, maybe they'll have a chance.
It's funny. Arizona has actually, I think, really fared well in this rivalry in recent years. This is, you know, they've gone up there and stolen a couple under tougher circumstances than the one that they faced Friday night. That said, to me, Utah is just such a change-up, right? I mean, this isn't preparing for another spread team, another fast team. I mean, this is the kind of team that in a short week, I think, can really give you trouble. They're so physical. They're so different than what you're going to face really from everybody outside of USC, at least in the Pac-12 South. To me, that's just the big challenge. How has this team been preparing for what they're going to see Friday night? And is there a way to prepare for physicality and brutality out there?
I don't know if there is. As you mentioned, you know, USC is probably has the reputation as maybe the most physical team in the conference, at least until recent times.
Until they started throwing the ball 40 times a game with a freshman.
Right. Yes. I mean, they have their, let's put it this way. They have the look, right? They have the big bodies up front that you sort of think of when you think of like what an SEC college team might look like, right? But Utah, they walk the walk, you know? They legitimately are one of the most physical teams in the league. I would say maybe Washington is the other one up there. Stanford, not necessarily this year, but in recent years. Arizona doesn't play either one of those two. They didn't play them last year. They don't play them this year because of the schedule rotation. So Utah is kind of it. And how do you prepare for that? I mean, you know, it's hard to simulate that in practice. There's going to be a lot of discussion all week long about we have to be physical. We have to bring that sort of force to the game on Friday night. But there might also be a little bit of a shock to the system when they actually get out there and experience what that's like. So they're going to have to adjust right away. Mm-hmm. I feel like the defense is up to the task. Honestly, this Utah offense doesn't scare me that much. Similar to Cal last week, they don't have a ton of like explosive playmakers. They don't have like a guy where you're just like, oh my gosh, if we don't, you know, contain this guy, we're going to be in trouble. My concern is with that offensive line. As mentioned, Laith Freck has been banged up. Kevin Sumlin said that that's had kind of a really detrimental effect on things because his practice time has been limited and he's been a game day decision each of the last 2 weeks. So some uncertainty. They were at their best when he was back and at his best. And if your offensive line isn't opening holes for the running game, you're in trouble. This is not, you know, this is not an Arizona team that can throw the ball all over the yard and move the ball that way. They need to be able to run the ball, and if they can't, it's going to be a lot of what we saw against BYU, a lot of three and outs, a lot of what we saw against Cal, a lot of three and outs.
And if you're trying to bang with Utah, right? If you're trying to bang, I mean, you need to run. You need to control the clock, or at least somewhat control the clock. It's a game of first downs and to me, clock control. And if there's no offensive line to open those lanes, if Khalil Tate is still hurt and hesitant to run, I mean, how are you going to gain yards? What is your angle going to be if you're Arizona?
Right. I think it's a great point. And it's not only, you know, to the betterment of the offense to do that, but it helps the defense too. You know, going back to that BYU game, and I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be making that comparison, but they're both teams from Utah who have physical reputations. So maybe there is something to it. That third quarter, it was three and out, long drive, three and out, long drive. And you could place a lot of blame on the defense, you know, for giving up those long drives, but the offense can help out by sustaining possessions, giving you time to re-energize and get refreshed and maybe make some adjustments on the sidelines. So it all kind of works together. And so they need all of those elements to be in place. How do you go about moving the ball against Utah is really the question. So let's say you can't run it the way you want to. To me, there's a couple things. You can continue the kind of the short, quick passing game, sort of view those as your running plays. And the other thing you can do is get the zone read going again. We saw signs of it against USC. We saw more signs of it against Cal. Maybe we're going to see things trending a little bit more in that direction. I've said it since the beginning of the season. It's not necessarily the success of those plays as much as the threat of those plays. If Khalil Tate can get 5 yards, 7 yards, 9 yards, do it once every 6 or 7 plays, that opens everything up. Right. But he has to be willing to pull the ball out and do it. Cal gave him those opportunities, and he finally started to take them. When you watch him run, though, he doesn't look quite the same. Have you right. noticed like yes. how sort of uncertain his step? Like he's, you know, it's an expression, but it kind of applies in this case. It looks like he's walking on eggshells yeah. out there.
I think it's interesting to see the way he freezes up as he gets near the line of scrimmage when he's trying to run. It's almost as if he's trying to give himself as much possible time there to get rid of the football and not have to run. One of the things that made Khalil Tate so great last year, I think, was not only his athleticism, which was incredible. I mean, he's a running back out there, the way he sees the field, but it was his fearlessness. There's a completely justifiable, understandable fear, I think, out of him. And if there's one thing that Utah, I think, can do, especially at home, especially in front of what should be a packed house on national TV with a physical defense, they can enact some fear. I think that maybe enact is the wrong word. But they can strike some fear into the heart of people who try to run on them. And I'm sure that's what Utah will try to do early, right? Is hit Khalil Tate. And we've heard sort of that refrain all year. You know, people are pulling on his leg in the pile. People are trying to hit him early, take him out early. I wouldn't be surprised if Utah tried to do that early and often on Friday night.
Remember when the conversation was about Khalil being too aggressive? He was
sure
plowing into people and everyone's like, oh, you know, you got to be smarter. You got to run out of bounds. Now it's kind of flipped the other way.
Right.
You know, it's like, why isn't he putting his shoulder down and trying to run over people a little bit more often? I mean, you have to be judicious about it. You can't like be like Earl Campbell out there if you're the starting quarterback for a team. But every once in a while, yeah, I feel like you have to do it. The question is that a psychological thing for him, or is right. that a physical thing where he feels like he just doesn't have the strength and power in his ankle mm-hmm. to do that?
Well, can't it be both? I mean,
yeah,
to me,
oh, for sure.
Look, and we forget sometimes, A, he's young, B, he's human. If I was trying to do anything, frankly, Michael Levin, I had a sprained ankle, A, I'd be telling everybody about it all the time. B, I would be very cautious to do anything remotely physical. Now, I am not an athlete, and Khalil Tate is. But, you know, part of it could just be reticence because he doesn't want to hurt his leg again because it hurts already. You know, and I think maybe it's as simple as that. Some of it is, if I try to do this, I might get hurt. And some of it might be, I'm hurt already and I don't want to get more hurt. Does that make any sense?
I've seen you play softball, Ryan, and it does sort of look like maybe you have some kind of an ankle issue. So you're telling me you've been healthy all this time?
Oh, it's my general slowness. Yes. I do everything slow motion. That's a surefire way not to get hurt.
Right. Yeah. I've been saying for weeks now that it's like part of it is physical and part of it is mental.
Right.
With him. And the two definitely are interrelated. Mm-hmm. Right. He just doesn't have the same mojo, same like swagger, confidence. Like during that stretch last year, you got the sense that he knew he was the best athlete on the field and no one could do anything about it.
Right.
And then somewhere along the way, you know, that changed. Maybe it was the ankle itself. Maybe it was this whole kind of mindset that he took where he just like, I want to make myself into a pocket passer now and running is just not going to be a part of my game. But that's what made Khalil Tate special.
Right.
You know, that's what differentiated him from other quarterbacks.
2 months ago, hand him the Heisman was the Sports Illustrated
headline.
And look, it's not Khalil Tate's fault.
No.
Sports Illustrated featured him. But I mean, how much our expectations of him have changed? Right. Is it has gone from, well, this guy better be something special to, well, let's hope he can keep them in this game against Utah.
It's remarkable.
It's remarkable.
As further kind of, you know, evidence of where things are, how things have evolved, you know, they played another quarterback last week for a series and they're probably going to do something similar again this week. It might be Jamari Joyner. It might be somebody else. We don't know for sure. But it definitely seems like they're going ahead with that plan. Let me ask, I haven't talked to you about it in a podcast setting,
right,
Ryan. Let me get your thoughts. What do you think that move, what does it mean?
I don't know. It's really interesting. I think it's a threat, frankly. I think some of it is a way to keep Khalil Tate maybe in line, maybe a way to keep him focused, where if you have that very real guy who's going to play one drive, and he might play more depending on how well Khalil Tate plays. I think that that's more pressure from the coaches for Khalil Tate to perform and perform to maybe the level that the coaches expect. I'm not saying that effort has been an issue with Khalil Tate, but certainly there had been no legitimate threat of benching him until last week. That's part of it. I don't know why you would put Jamari Joyner in to run three vanilla plays and punt the football away. I don't understand why they did that necessarily, especially since Tate was playing fairly well. I know that had been scripted long before the game. I mean, you had heard inklings of that as far back as Thursday morning. So I don't know. I mean, I think that's it. I would have been happier or more understanding of what they did if they brought in Jamari Joyner in certain packages throughout the game, right? If we're going to do some sort of a wildcat with him, some sort of single wing thing to work in our run game. I would have been much happier in understanding of that as opposed to what they did, which is, well, we'll run him out for a drive. And then the drive stalls, so never mind.
Yeah, I hate to stereotype quarterback, but you have the dual threat quarterback in Khalil Tate, and then the changeup that they've gone to is the other dual threat quarterback.
Like,
if you're going to do something different, mm-hmm. you know, don't you maybe want to go in a different direction with a different style of quarterback, you know, who brings just a kind of a different mm-hmm. element to the field. That was a puzzling thing about it. And also the timing of it, right? You go into the game with this plan. And I talked to Justin about this, on Monday, mm-hmm. but I try not to criticize the process because the results didn't pan out.
Right. Right?
So they had this idea and they implemented it. And it didn't work. So, you know, it's easy to second guess at that point, you know, and I get the whole idea behind it. The problem was they had scored on their first two possessions. It's
right.
not like the offense was struggling and they also hadn't gotten off to a lot of great starts. Then all of a sudden you change quarterbacks and it just changes the rhythm. It just kind of gets things out of sync. Maybe your play calls are different. Whatever the case, it just ended up having the opposite effect.
Right.
Of what they were going for.
And why do you think they did it?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is a motivational ploy.
Right.
I think part of it is just trying to spark the offense. I think part of it is we got to get these guys some real game experience in case this ankle situation gets worse, or in case we decide to go in another direction. You know, then they've got some real reps. Part of it is rewarding players for their hard work and practice. You know, what you mentioned earlier about it being a threat to his
right.
his spot, Tate's spot. You have to remember, he had to fight and earn his playing time last year, and he was frustrated about it, and he was motivated to leapfrog Brandon Dawkins on the depth chart. And then you have all this hype around Khalil Tate for the rest of that season, throughout the offseason. As you said, no legitimate threat
right.
to him in spring. Then you have the whole weird thing with the Bleacher Report story where he's kind of like, you know, sort of taking credit for how the coaching search turned out. None of that kind of leads to me anyway. And again, this is just my interpretation of things. But that doesn't lead to like the hungriest Khalil Tate that he could be, right? He's satisfied, content in his job status. He sort of views himself as this untouchable figure within the program. You know, maybe someone does need to light the proverbial fire under him a little bit.
Right. You covered USC. You covered Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
What was Tuesday?
Competition Tuesday.
Competition Tuesday. Yeah. And snarky remarks about paying Reggie Bush's parents aside. What USC built his program on, or what Pete Carroll built USC's program on, was the idea of competition. Was we're going to take the best 22 guys, right? And the way to get on the field is to compete, whether you are a true freshman or a fifth-year senior. We're going to take the best guy. There has been no competition this year with Khalil Tate. None whatsoever. I mean, the backup quarterback, God bless Rhett Rodriguez. I think that in the right circumstance, he could be a very good quarterback somewhere. But Rhett Rodriguez doesn't scare Khalil Tate. He's his old coach's kid. You know, he's not a physical specimen. He may be the smartest guy on the field, Rhett Rodriguez, but he's not the biggest or fastest. I don't think that intimidates Khalil Tate at all. There has been no competition. And I think when we talk about some of these things, like why doesn't he run more? Why is the body language the way it is? Why doesn't he really interact much with his coaches on the sidelines during games? Maybe some of that is attitude. I'm not saying it is. I don't know enough right now to know. But maybe it's attitude. And maybe having sort of this Jamari Joyner package in your back pocket, if you're Kevin Sumlin, is a way to make sure Khalil Tate's attitude stays right. And if it doesn't, and if he struggles, or if he doesn't put forth the effort you want, well, maybe Jamari Joyner will play 3 drives a game next week, and maybe 6 drives a game the week after that.
Maybe it's just the nature of football, but I feel like ever since I've been here, we've spent an inordinate amount of time psychoanalyzing the minds of Anu Solomon, Brandon sure. Dawkins,
sure.
Khalil Tate, like whoever the quarterback is, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously it is, and you know, and is increasingly becoming and will forever be the most important position in football,
sports,
right?
In sports overall.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, you could maybe make a case for goalie in hockey. But you know, I think most people would say quarterback because you touch the ball on every single offensive play. You have so many decisions, that you have to make. I wonder if part of this too is that there's just been an adjustment made sure. by opponents,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we can't discount that. There's a pretty clear drop off in Khalil's average per carry. He was still running the ball at the end of the season, but he wasn't running it nearly as successfully. Obviously, this year there's been a lot of different circumstances involved in that. And again, I go back to, it's not necessarily the success, it's the threat. In the Purdue game, he had 20 carries for 58 yards, but they were so concerned about his running mm-hmm. that it opened up the passing game. And he had probably the most, you know, other than the Southern Utah game, mm-hmm. the most efficient passing game of his career.
Right. Well, and the threat applies to Khalil Tate's teammates, right? I mean, it's not just the threat of Khalil Tate running. Khalil Tate will get more opportunities if Arizona had a better deep ball threat, for instance. I mean, who's their best deep ball guy right now? Tony Ellison.
I mean, Sean Poindexter, Sean Brown, Tony Ellison, they're all about equal
right.
to me.
I mean, I think the game would open up more for Khalil Tate if they had a tight end. You know, there's a few on the roster, I've been told, but they don't throw the tight end. I think that Khalil Tate...
But whose fault is that? We don't have access to the coaches.
It's the scheme. It's the scheme.
Is it the scheme?
It's got to be.
Or is it the quarterback not taking advantage of those opportunities? I don't know.
I would think that if it were the quarterback not taking advantage of the opportunities, that perhaps the man who invented the scheme would have told him to do more of that. That's a really backward sounding way of saying, if Khalil Tate was just ignoring the tight ends, you'd think maybe an offensive coordinator or the coach would say, throw to them more. That when they script out their first drive every week, maybe, you know, that would be part of it.
Considering that Kevin Sumlin coaches the tight ends, he would probably have a pretty vested interest
right.
in seeing that happen. All right. So taking Tate in the quarterback situation right. out of the mix here, is there anything else that kind of gives you hope that Arizona can pull this off Friday night?
The defense. Yeah. The defense. Oh, my goodness. Where did this defense come from? I mean, raise your hand if you thought last week's game was going to be a slugfest. I didn't. I thought it was going to be, you know, 41-31 or something like that. To me, it's not only the way they're playing, but it's the opportunistic play, right? It's they made plays last week. It wasn't just limiting Cal to those points. It was forcing turnovers. It was making them, it was two returns for touchdowns. This is a defense that had been knocking at the door in terms of turnovers all year long. And last week they were finally rewarded with, I think, a few lucky breaks, but some just great plays that they made themselves. And, if they can play like this every week, all of a sudden, you're not asking Khalil Tate to score 45 points. You're asking Khalil Tate to score 31 points, let's say. And all of a sudden, your chances of winning those games, if you're Arizona, go up. And maybe what you're asking your quarterback to do becomes a little bit more reasonable.
The return of PJ Johnson has made a big difference.
Right.
Playing defensive end. He's made plays himself. I feel like he's made Derek Bowles a better player. He's just opening up a lot of things for the front. And in one of my storylines for Friday's paper, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the safeties. They've kind of shuffled things around a little bit. They moved Scotty Young right. to the spur position, which I thought all along was the best spot for him. They switched Jarius Wallace and Demetrius Flanagan Fowles. And for whatever reason, that's been the best combination mm-hmm. that they've been able to come up with. And those guys have been involved in a lot of the turnovers. The safeties have three of the four picks that they have this year. And one of them was actually they teamed up. Demetrius batted the ball yeah. and Scotty caught it. So, you know, you like what you're seeing on that side of the ball. You know, we talked a little bit. I did with Justin the other day on his radio show about midseason MVPs, Colin Schooler. No doubt about it,
right.
the overall team MVP. And you never would have thought that coming into the season, not because Colin wasn't a good player, but because he was teammates with Khalil Tate.
Sure.
Right? I did a series in the summer of the 10, you know, team MVPs other than Khalil Tate because it seems so obvious
that it was going to be Khalil Tate.
He was going to be the MVP.
Right.
So you've got a defense, okay? Mm-hmm. That's half of the equation. I you know, I've always been told by coaches if you can bring a pack of defense and a running game on a road trip, you've got a chance to win an away game. They've got one, mm-hmm. you know, can they get something going with the other? I'm pretty skeptical about that.
That's a coachism right there, by the way. That's good. That's good.
You like that? I think Lane Kiffin might have been the one who said that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because Lane Kiffin, known for his defense and running game. Very interesting.
he knows more about football than he lets on.
You know, Mike Stoops, who is a newly unemployed defensive coordinator, you know, was the head coach here when I covered yeah. the Wildcats. And you know, the one thing he said to me about winning on the road once, because I had asked some probing question. I must have been 26 years old. And I asked my fourth question about why they sucked on the road. And he looked at me and he goes, man, it's hard. It's hard. And I think people underestimate how darn hard it is to win on the road, especially in conference play. You're going to, if you're Arizona on a short week, you're walking into what I will presume is a sellout crowd.
They've had 53 straight sellouts, so I'd say that's probably going to happen again. Yeah.
Sellout crowd, cold weather, elevation against a team that beat Stanford's pants off 6 days earlier. It's hard. Even if Arizona executes well, and execution is like physicality, that's just football words that mean nothing. But if Arizona executes well, that they're not guaranteed a win there. I mean, they need what happened last week against Cal to happen again against Utah, which is not only does Arizona execute its game plan, but it gets luckier than hell on a couple of occasions and turns those opportunistic plays into touchdowns. That's why I think it's going to be so hard. Utah plays not to lose. Utah's not going to be as careless with the football as Cal was a year ago or a week ago. Utah is, I mean, they have a path to success that seems pretty easy. Ironically, it's the things that Arizona wants to pack with it on the road, right? Utah runs the ball well. They play good defense. They're huge on both lines. They're old on both lines. It's, you know, what's, you're a Star Wars guy, aren't you?
Sure.
What's the thing? You know, it's the where they blow up the ship, the Death Star.
Yeah.
In order to blow up the Death Star, you kind of got to, what, there's like one little soft spot in the Death Star?
Right.
Okay. Well, is it called something?
Not necessarily.
I mean, that's what this is.
Yeah.
This is them flying into Salt Lake City, and you got to hit it just right. And, you know, maybe that means they have a 20% chance of winning. I mean, my goodness, they're 2 touchdown underdogs. You know, there is a path to success, but it's a narrow one. And I'm not sure Arizona's played well enough lately for me to think they can accomplish what they need to.
Khalil Tate has to be the Luke Skywalker in this scenario. Right?
There we go. Yes.
He has to use the force to his advantage. You know, second game of the season for Utah at Northern Illinois. They only won 17-6.
I watched every snap of that game.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly like a blowout against a, you know, pretty solid MAC program.
And they got really lucky at the end too. Utah, I think, had like a scoop and score touchdown late in the game. I think they were up three or four and turned that into a score the other way. I mean, they were going to lose or win narrowly for most of that game. And then, you know, the final score was made it look a little bit better, a little bit easier for them than it was.
Yeah, I guess my point is, if the defense continues to play well, and last week's result at Stanford aside, I don't think Utah is the type of team that's just going to run away with it.
Right. It's not going to be 40-6. Right.
So if you can hang around, make some plays on defense, you know, I'm asking a lot to say make some plays on special teams because Utah traditionally has the best special teams in the league, and they have my favorite player in all of college football, and Mitch Wishnowsky, their superstar punter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tall order, you know, asking Arizona to beat Utah at its own game in their place on a Friday night, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Before we go here, let me share my weird take with you here. I thought forever that Arizona in the Pac-10 wanted to sort of emulate UCLA in football. They wanted to be kind of a poor man's UCLA, right? You get some LA guys, some skill position guys. You're never going to ground and pound the way USC seemed to do every year. But you could be a little creative offensively. You could play some decent defense. That Arizona would have been happy being sort of UCLA light. I think that the league has shifted so much now that Arizona's role model should be Utah. I mean, Utah has figured out a way to win in this league. And it's not by out-recruiting people necessarily. It's recruiting specific types of guys. Nobody in the league is better year in, year out on special teams than Utah. I would say nobody outside of maybe USC and maybe Oregon recruits the islands or Polynesian players as well as Utah. I mean, Utah has a half dozen guys right now starting that are either from the islands or Polynesian extraction. A lot of them live in or are from Utah or the Salt Lake City area. They have a physical, boring, but successful style of play. I mean, to me, Kyle Whittingham is sort of carrying on Dick Tomey's legacy only at Utah. And if you're Arizona, I think, and if you're looking for an identity in the league, trying to be Utah is okay. I think the odds of Arizona succeeding as sort of Utah light are much better than Arizona succeeding by trying to mimic, say, USC or UCLA. What say you, Michael Lev?
I think you're absolutely right. Let's look at Utah's win totals over the last several seasons. Mm-hmm. 7, 9, 10, 9. You know, they had a couple of years with only 5 wins, but they were just kind of, you know, still getting used to Pac-12 play after coming over from the Mountain West. But if you're Arizona, that's exactly what you should
7, 9, 10, 9
endeavor to be.
They build a statue at 7, 9, 10, 9.
Yeah. You should be able to recruit the same types of players. You should be able to win 7 or 8 games every year and then have the occasional season like in 2014, where they, you know, rose up and won the Pac-12 South. But I think you're absolutely spot on. And I think that the Polynesian pipeline that we've talked about several times on the podcast, still there's still some work to be done to get that thing fully reestablished. We haven't seen a ton of Polynesian commits so far in the upcoming class. It's something that they've talked about. It's something that's, you know, was a major part of Dick Tomey's success when he was here. And there's plenty of talent out there, whether it's in Utah, Hawaii, Samoa, whatever the case might be.
Oceanside.
Arizona just needs to really be committed to going after those guys.
Right. And Utah, I think, proves that you don't have to have all the best players every year to be a darn good football program, and that you don't need to be super cutting edge either. I mean, in a way, they sort of have followed Stanford's lead, I think, where they go, you know, we're not going to try to score 50 points a game. We're not going to say, come here and you can smash our passing records. I mean, it's very much a sort of old
meat
school
and potatoes.
Yeah, old school football program. And you know what? Their fans appreciate it. Here's what I like too about if you're sort of emulating Utah as opposed to emulating USC. You've been to Utah a handful of times.
Sure.
Okay. Their stadium's super nice, but it's not leaps and bounds better than Arizona Stadium. Their campus is not better than Arizona's campus. Their facilities aren't better than Arizona's facilities. Utah is able to do everything that they're doing here, I think, with sort of a comparable, you know, bank vault, so to speak, is Arizona. Money stack is Arizona. I mean, Utah has proven that it can work. And so
what's the difference then? To me, a lot of it is Kyle Whittingham.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what the identity of that program and that team is every single year. Consistent, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be physical. They're going to play good defense. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play special teams. Doesn't sound that exciting, but when you're winning 7 to 9 games every year, then the fans end up pretty happy at the end of the day.
It's Dick Tomey. I think it's identity. I think it's loyalty among his staff. You know, remember, there was a time a couple of years ago where he lost his offensive coordinator and his defensive coordinator. It was Kalani Sitake and another guy. You know, it's that, but it's consistency. It is consistency. The older I get Michael Leb, the more I believe that if you hire a coach, maybe you're better off giving him a 10-year contract and saying, build it the right way. I'm not going to fire you for wins and losses. I mean, if you end up arrested, I'll fire you. But here's a 10-year contract. Build it the right way. And you look at somebody like Kyle Whittingham, I mean, they haven't really fallen off. They're winning just as many games now as they did when they were in the Mountain West. I mean, they're beating Washington State and Cal just as easily as they used to beat Air Force and Colorado State. I mean, it's because they built it the right way. It's because he's gotten the support finally from his athletic director that I think he lacked for a long time. He is I think he's the third highest paid coach in the league. But he pays his assistants well. I mean, there is a boring stability there that kids like playing for. Kids like stability when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to where they're going. Nobody goes somewhere hoping that their coach gets blown out after 2 years and all of a sudden there's a new system. It's boring, man, but you know what? It works.
What's funny about what you just said is that it would never happen. I mean, it did happen with Jimbo Fisher. He did get a 10-year deal. But you know how it is now. It's what have you done for me lately? And there are like people are calling for Willie Taggart to be fired at Florida State after like 2 games.
I know.
Let alone not 2 years. 2 games.
And coaches screw this up, right? I mean, they could have given Rich Rod a 10-year deal when they hired him, but Rich Rod would have wanted it renegotiated every January. And I mean, even when they weren't winning games, Rich Rod would negotiate his deal every offseason, right? Or at least attempt to. I think that if you just sat there and went, there's trust between us and the coach. We're not going to fire him if they go 4-8. He's not going to shake the money tree every offseason trying to get another 50 grand. And we're just going to build it the right way. I think that given the time to do it, coaches will make better decisions. I think a lot of the mistakes that you see coaches make, whether that's system or personnel or recruiting, stem from the external pressure to win now before you get fired.
Trying to keep your job.
People make mistakes trying to keep their jobs. And I think that job security, if you said, hey, here's 10 years, we're going to build it from the ground up, treat it more like, look at me, by the way, mixed sports metaphor time.
Here we go.
Treating it more like, say, a baseball team where you go, we're going to draft and we're going to scout And we know that these guys won't come up for another 8 years, but that's okay.
The process.
The process.
Yeah.
There's no process in college football. And I think that if you could, it would take a special place to do it, but in an AD with some real clout to do it. But, you know, one of these days it's going to happen. I think you're going to see that be a new trend.
I don't think Kyle Whittingham got fired after those 2-5-7 seasons, did he?
He did not.
Was there ever even like any discussion about that?
I know
he made changes on his staff and has done that many, many times over the course of his tenure there. But that's going to happen.
Right.
You know, guys are going to leave. Guys are going to retire. Guys are going to get different jobs, or you want to change up your scheme a little bit. But I don't really remember that being the case.
No.
Maybe he got a little bit. He had kind of a honeymoon period because they were new to the Pac-12, but they stuck with him. He stuck with his principles, and look where they are.
Right. And the irony of all of this, of course, Michael, is when they added those two teams, the sentiment throughout the league was you were adding Colorado for football and Utah for basketball. And I believe Colorado won the first ever Pac-12 basketball tournament, and Utah has become the football power. Very interesting.
Although Colorado is atop the Pac-12 South.
Just because they haven't lost a game yet, Michael Lev. Yes, yes. Should we wrap it up here?
Sure.
By the way, do you like Salt Lake? But before we go, where does it rank?
I do like Salt Lake a lot. I was talking about this with some colleagues recently. I feel like it's underrated. It's kind of a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the sort of person who needs to be at a bar until 3 a.m. or whatever, but I just would like a city where you can walk around, get a good meal. Salt Lake City has those things. The weather is usually pretty nice. I mean, it's cool, but it's kind of refreshing in that way. And it's also super easy.
Yeah.
Right? I'm, you know, kind of all about convenience. You can fly right into Salt Lake City and you're like 15 minutes away from the stadium. Whereas if you go to Oregon or Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, Stanford, Colorado, it's a flight and a drive.
Right.
And a pretty significant drive.
That's why I hate going to Cal. Cal is you fly into the Oakland airport, you sit in an hour and a half of traffic, you stay at a hotel. You then have to navigate all the way over to the stadium. It's a thing.
They do have public transportation.
That's nice.
Out there. So yeah, you can take the BART. It would require a bit of a walk up the hill, but it can be done. I did it when I went as a fan to the Northwestern Cal game, which was Jared Goff's first ever college game.
I remember that.
Freshman.
Sonny Dykes versus Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you staying at the Rick Majerus Marriott, by the way?
I am not. No.
I always made it a point.
Is that what it's called?
Unofficially. It's the Marriott where Rick Majerus lived for a decade, so I think it should be. Well, let's wrap up there. Michael, travel safe, stay warm, have a good time. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. For Michael Leff, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.
Chico Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.